Let's begin to really learn the techniques of the Caress Active Listening Model with the first letter, C. C stands for concentrate, which is hard to do if there are a lot of competing noises and distractions, like this music, for instance. That's better. You know, if you're trying to see something and there's a barrier in the way, then you try to change your position to avoid whatever's blocking your sight. But sometimes we don't recognize when there's a noise barrier interfering with our hearing. I'm sure you've had the experience of sitting in a crowded restaurant trying to talk with someone across the table when suddenly you notice that you're almost shouting to be heard and straining to hear the other person. It gets even more complicated if there's a lot of visual activity going on, people walking past you and so on. And then, if you add music on top of that, the experience of trying to listen to someone becomes almost an Olympic event. Just as words on a page have to be a certain size and clarity before you can read them, the sound of another person's voice has to be a certain size, or what we call volume, in order for you to hear it. That's simple enough in quiet surroundings, but it becomes more complicated when general noise levels are greater. So it's a good idea to begin an important conversation with this question in mind. Is this the best place and the best time we can find to talk with one another? In this segment on concentration, we'll discuss the external and internal barriers that prevent us from being active listeners. And I'll teach you easy techniques, specific ways to overcome those barriers and improve your ability to focus on other people as they speak. Along the way, I'll give you some fun exercises to demonstrate how much you've learned about concentration. To begin, let's discuss the continuum that exists from non-listener to active listener. By non-listener, I mean someone who makes no effort to concentrate or to hear what the other person is saying. I suspect that you don't fall into this category because you've made a commitment to this program, but you can tell who these people are. They have blank stares on their faces. Instead of acknowledging what you say, they go off on a tangent or interrupt you. They often like to have the last word. Non-listeners only pay attention when they think the speaker has authority over them, or they'll get into trouble if they miss something. If we move along the continuum of listening ability, we come to the people who do pay attention to the words of the speaker, but they don't think about them very much. We call these folks marginal listeners. If I were to say to you, I think I'm going to get that report done by Friday. The marginal listener hears, the report will be done by Friday. The marginal listener misses the preliminary qualifier, I think, and also misses the tentative tone of my voice. He hears the words, but misses the meaning or the intent. Marginal listeners get easily distracted. A phone rings or a person passes by and bingo, their attention is gone. That's because they were barely there to begin with. Marginal listeners don't like complex discussions or presentations because it takes too much work to understand the content. You can imagine the number of mistakes and the amount of makeup work marginal listeners cause for themselves and for other people who depend on them for information. To use my example, what if I don't get that report done by Friday? If my superior is a marginal listener, she might say, Tony, I heard you say that report would be on my desk today. And any protest I might make, like, Jane, I said I thought I'd get it done by Friday, but it's taken me longer, would just fall on deaf ears. Jane heard me say, by Friday, and that's all she heard. Next on the continuum is another kind of listener who only hears part of the message. This one we'll call an evaluative listener. These people tend to be logical listeners. They concentrate more and give more attention to what's being said than the marginal listener, but they're not making an effort to understand the speaker's intent. They evaluate the message strictly on the basis of the words delivered, and they totally ignore the part of the message that's carried by the speaker's vocal intonation, body language, and facial expressions. Later on, when we're dealing with the S in Caress, that stands for sensing, I'll give you a lot of tips on how to read those nonverbal messages. The evaluative listener misses most of them because he remains emotionally detached from the conversation. That may be okay if you're just discussing data, but many, if not most, everyday conversations involve feelings. For instance, you wouldn't be a very effective real estate salesperson if you were simply an evaluative listener. Many people are reluctant to say negative things about a house they're looking at, especially if the owner is standing nearby. But the potential buyer's body language and tone may reveal a lot to you in terms of what works and what doesn't work about the house in question. So a marginal listener listens on the surface of a conversation, picks up a few pieces of data, and makes generalizations. An evaluative listener hears the whole content, that is, the words or the facts, but she can really miss out on the subtle nuances that may color or contradict what the person says. Therefore, the evaluative listener really doesn't have a true understanding of the message. Now we move on to the level of listening that you want to become competent at. Active listening. It's unquestionably the most powerful level of listening, and it's the most demanding because it requires the deepest level of concentration. To be an active listener means that you're employing each of the six aspects of the Caress model. You're concentrating, acknowledging, researching and responding, exercising emotional control, sensing the person's feelings, and structuring the content in your head or on paper so that you understand the speaker's priorities. To listen actively means you suspend your personal thoughts and feelings and focus instead on the other person's point of view. If you're not at the level of an active listener now, you will be if you follow the step-by-step approach I'm presenting and then practice, practice, practice until it becomes second nature for you. Let's assume that you're prepared to give your best in the area of concentration. That intention is all well and good, but there still may be barriers to listening actively. I'll discuss four of them briefly with you right now. They're barriers that come from the environment, barriers that have to do with the speaker, barriers that result from the content of what's being said, and barriers that come from you, the listener. We've already pointed out the most obvious barrier in the environment. Competing noise, such as music, traffic, a manufacturing process, TV, radio, or someone else talking loudly nearby. A lot of people think they can concentrate on messages from two sources simultaneously. For instance, watching television and listening to someone in the room at the same time. Sorry, but your spouse is right. It's impossible to concentrate on two messages at the same time. Although your hearing ability may be able to take in two different signals, your listening ability allows you to process only one at a time. One way to deal with a message overlap situation is to switch back and forth between the two messages, missing some of each and hearing some of each. Another way to handle the situation is to eliminate one of the noises, but that's not always possible. A third alternative is to focus selectively on one of the two speakers. Selective listening means tuning out one set of signals and tuning into another. Your ear receives both signals, but your brain selects the signal it wants to listen to. Imagine being in a restaurant where your table is touching the table of the couple next to you. You can tune into their conversation as easily as you tune into what the person across from you is saying. But you choose to listen to your table mate. That's selective listening, and it takes effort. I'm going to give you a one-minute test to see if you can focus on one of two speakers who are talking at the same time on two different topics. To make it a little easier, one is a female and the other is a male. Try to give your full attention to one speaker or the other.
A century ago, a letter to Paris could take 20 days. Cyrus Field's inspiration was to lay wires across the ocean so that telegraph messages could be sent in minutes. After three unsuccessful attempts, a cable was laid between Ireland and Newfoundland, but shortly thereafter the cable stopped working. In 1865, Field rented the largest ship then afloat, the Great Eastern, and made another attempt. After about 1,000 miles of cable had been laid, it broke. Finally, in 1866, a single unbroken cable was stretched between the United States States and Europe. At first, only a single message could be sent at a time. Later, with special equipment, eight messages could be sent at once. Today, satellites do most of the work the cables used to do.
Well, how did you do? Were you able to concentrate on one voice only and tune out the other one? Which story did you follow? The Greek sponges or the laying of the transatlantic cable? For those of you who listen to the sponges story, tell me where most of the sponges we use in the United States come from. The answers, Florida. What kind of boats are used in sponge gathering? Glass-bottom boats. For those of you who listen to the cable story, what was the name of the large ship that attempted to lay the cable after the fourth attempt failed? The Great Eastern. Altogether, how many attempts were made to lay the cable? The answer is six. Let's listen to the overlapping messages again. This time, listen to the one you did not choose to listen to the first time, and I'll ask you a couple more quiz questions after that.
A century ago, a letter to Paris could take 20 days. Cyrus Field's inspiration was to lay wires across the ocean so that telegraph messages could be sent in minutes. After three unsuccessful attempts, the cable was laid between Ireland and Newfoundland, but shortly thereafter the cable stopped working. In 1865, Field rented the largest ship then afloat, the Great Eastern, and made another attempt. After about 1,000 miles of cable had been laid, it broke. Finally, in 1866, a single unbroken cable was stretched between the United States and Europe. At first, only a single message could be sent at a time. Later, with special equipment, eight messages could be sent at once. Today, satellites do most of the work the cables used to do.
Did you find that you could concentrate on the other story, the one you didn't listen to the first time? Not easy, huh? For those of you who listened this time to the sponges story, how are the sponges gathered in deep water? By men in diving suits. For those of you who listened to the cable story, what was the year the first successful cable was laid across the Atlantic? The answer's 1866. That was tough, I know. Selective listening is a skill you can get better at with practice. If you have more than one child, you might have already polished up on that skill. We're focusing on the first category of barriers to concentration, barriers from the environment. And there are some less obvious ones besides competing noise and voices. How about sitting in an uncomfortable chair, or in a room that's too hot or too cold, or that has a bad odor? Each of those can be a distraction. Then there are the physical disruptions, such as telephone calls, visitors dropping in, or sirens going by, things you can't plan for. But again, you can minimize those kinds of distractions by adjusting your level of concentration as necessary. The second category of barriers are those that arise from the speaker. These are external, too, but they're not environmental. They're distractions that come from your perception of the speaker. These can include the way the speaker is dressed, whether he's shaved, the smell of the perfume she's wearing, or whether their size or height is very different from yours. A friend once told me a story of how he was approached by a salesman who was very impressively dressed, expensive suit, shoes, tie, the works. The salesman also had a fancy leather briefcase and wrote with a very expensive pen. But my friend couldn't help but be distracted by the fact that this man was wearing white socks. He kept thinking, what kind of a person would go to all that trouble to look so sharp and then wear white socks? He obviously missed some of the salesperson's message because he was distracted by his socks. Speaker-related barriers can also include any mannerisms the speaker may have. Maybe she has a nervous twitch, or he stutters, or she keeps playing with the 12 rings on her fingers, or he says, all the time. In addition, a speaker's facial expression can communicate anxiety or anger or flirtation. Each of those subtle messages can get in the way of really hearing what they're saying. A third area where attributes of the speaker can get in the way of the message has to do with the person's regional or ethnic accent. I hope we're getting past it, but I know many people still think that certain accents connote intelligence or social standing more than others. In this next exercise, you'll hear a total of eight speakers. First, there'll be four different American speakers and then four foreign speakers speaking English. For the purpose of this exercise, pay attention to your reaction to the speaker, not the content.
You probably know firsthand how frustrating inefficient meetings are. Most managers spend 25 to 30% of their time in meetings, and studies show that the average cost of a meeting runs over $1,000. Since it's rare to have a meeting-free day, the total cost of meetings for most organizations quickly adds up to a major expense. Meetings are currently the most expensive communication activity in the corporate world, more costly than word processing, computers, paperwork, or multitudes of phone calls. Consider the salaries of those in attendance, preparation costs, travel expenses, and the price of materials, facilities, and equipment used during the meeting.
Perhaps even more costly than the loss of time and money is the reduced morale that happens when people are forced to sit through boring, poorly planned and conducted meetings. When unproductive meetings occur regularly, people with demanding schedules begin to avoid attending. Yet these are the very individuals whose participation may be the most important.
When meetings are well managed, they're an effective and essential tool for communication within an organization. Important decisions are made, ideas are generated, and information is shared. Meetings are a critical part of team building, and as team spirit grows, the company benefits as the group's ability to work together and make decisions grows.
Could you identify any of those regional accents? Granted, not everyone from a region speaks with the same degree of accent, but roughly, those speakers represented Boston, Atlanta, Chicago, and New York. When you only have a voice to go by, do you find yourself reacting differently to the various accents? Does any one of them connote highly educated to you? Does any one of them connote a difference in social values from your own? Would you listen more intently to one of those voices? Would any of the accents cause you to listen less intently? Unfortunately, many of us have developed biases for or against certain regional and ethnic accents. We make value judgments based on accent without knowing anything else about the person. And hearing one that we think less of can cause us to miss some of the person's message. Chances are, if you did react negatively to one or more of the previous accents, it would take more effort, more concentration on your part, to listen actively to someone speaking with that accent. Now let's continue the exercise, this time listening to people with foreign accents. Again, pay attention to your reaction to the accent, not the content.
Meeting leaders who expect to have effective meetings must be aware of energy cycles. Meeting energy is affected by tension cycles, interest in topics, complexity of topics, the number of topics to be addressed, the scheduling of those topics, and the level of participation of attendees. Every meeting has an energy cycle that can be managed and enhanced. The early part of the meeting tends to be more lively and creative than the end of it, so items requiring more imaginative ideas, mental energy, and clear heads should be addressed early in the meeting. Also, any items of absolute priority should be first on the agenda, avoiding the possibility of getting stuck on low payoff topics.
In the absence of critical high priority items, one scheduling option is to address first those items which can be brought to closure quickly and easily, leaving the rest of the meeting for a lengthier item, and consider reserving a controversial high-interest item till the end of the session. The high-interest level in that item will keep attention from lagging.
Items can be grouped in a way that allows people to cycle in and out of the meeting as they are needed. The energy level automatically rises as fresh faces and new voices appear. Finally, try to find a unifying item to end the meeting. If any of the items on the agenda have been divisive, it's particularly important to bring the group back into harmony.
Well, did you have a negative or positive reaction to any of those accents? The accents you heard were German, Spanish, Chinese, and Indian. Depending on your own ethnic background and where you grew up, you may have favorable or unfavorable attitudes toward people with those accents. Again, your ability to concentrate on someone speaking with a regional or ethnic accent will be challenged by your own biases. If you found that your reactions to the accents did vary, then you've taken the first step. Awareness of your biases is necessary if you want to eliminate them. When we get to the E of the caress model, emotional control, I'll give you a lot more information on how to address the subjective reactions you'd like to change. A person's style of delivery can be a barrier for you, too. The speaker can sound like he's pontificating as some great authority, or she can sound too sweet and little girl-like to be taken seriously as a vice president. Some tones, like accents, can be pleasant and enhance the speaker's message for you, and some can turn you off. How fast or how slowly a person speaks is also an aspect of their style. How would you like to be this guy's stockbroker?
Mac, yeah, listen, I've just got a minute. I was reading the Wall Street Journal this morning, and then my lawyer called me and mentioned he'd gotten a hot tip, and my intuition's been roaring lately. And anyway, this is what I want you to do. Pull me out of GE completely and put an equal amount into Teledyne. And then I want you to move about $50,000 into the Brandywine Fund and take some out of the Gabelli Assets Fund. And I heard that foreign autos are going to hit big this year, so look into that German and Italian company for me. And don't forget to move that money out of my pension plan and into my IRA. Got it? Listen, I got to run. Bye, Mac.
Woo! Not only was there a lot of information, but he talked so fast that the broker had to be listening very carefully just to hear every word. A little later in this program, we'll give you some help in developing the skill of sequencing when you're given a lot of information. If I were Mac and I got a call from this guy, the first thing I'd say is, I know you're busy, but you have to slow down if you want me to get everything right the first time. People who talk too fast risk the possibility that not everything they say will be heard, and worse, that they may be perceived as a fast talker. The speed alone can create a negative attitude in the listener. The opposite problem can be painful, too. How would you like to have this woman as your English lit teacher?
And as we all know, that is, each and every one of us who has taken the time to study Shakespeare in any detail knows that his use of metaphor was beyond compare. The grand and vigorous function of metaphor is the generation of new language as it is needed. As human culture becomes more complex, more abstract, we need new phrases, and we often create new ideas by combining simple terms. Take, for instance, the word head, and notice what happens when we attach it to army, table, bed, a nail, or even steam. We arrive at entirely new concepts. The head of the army, the head of the table, the head of the bed, the head of a nail, and a head of steam. Isn't metaphor wonderful?
Metaphors may be wonderful, but a slow-talking teacher can take all the joy out of learning about them. Remember, people can think at speeds as high as 400 to 500 words per minute. With extremely slow speakers, like that teacher speaking at less than 100 words per minute, only 10% of your brain capacity is being used. It's impossible to shut off the other 90%. So your tendency will be to think of other things. Maintaining an active listening concentration with slow talkers takes a great deal of effort, but it can be done. Another barrier that originates with the speaker has to do with the content of the message. Perhaps she's using words that aren't familiar to you, and you don't want to indicate that you don't understand. Maybe what he's saying is full of buzzwords like politically correct or environmentally conscious, and you're sure he doesn't know what he's talking about. Or maybe she's using some current lingo, such as New Age talk about sharing space or finding your inner child, that may be hard to understand if you're not familiar with that school of thought. There's also the situation where the speaker makes statements that are highly charged for you, and your blood pressure starts to rise. When we deal with the E of the caress model, we'll talk about exercising emotional control when the speaker's use of language gets in the way of your ability to listen effectively. There are two quick tips I can give you to deal with these speaker-related barriers. One is to find out anything you can about the speaker in advance so you'll know what to expect. And the second one is to focus on the content of the message, not on the personality or the characteristics or the style of the speaker. I had you do the opposite in the previous exercise, but that was to illustrate a point. In normal conversation, the message should take precedence. Focusing on the content means simply learning what you can learn without forming judgments about the other person. Easier said than done, I know. But it'll be a benchmark of your ability to listen actively when you can apply these techniques to content you really disagree with. You're probably beginning to realize how challenging this active listening skill can be, but let me remind you that the benefits are well worth it. You'll be able to listen well in noisy environments, to people whose regional or ethnic accents used to create listening barriers for you. You'll be able to listen to the content of a person's message and not have it be clouded by his or her personality. At the highest level of this skill, you'll be able to listen actively to someone whose values totally contradict your own and hopefully find some common ground in difficult situations. So far, we've talked about barriers to listening that arise from the environment and from your perception of the speaker and his or her message. In the next segment of this program, we'll focus on those barriers that come from inside you, the listener. And I'll give you some simple and effective techniques for overcoming most listening barriers.